Hi everyone, this is Tatum, and I am going to podcast on Chapter 26, which is 21st Century Pediatric Nursing. This chapter really focuses on disease and prevention efforts in order to improve the quality and safety of children. So the first slide that I would like you to look at is slide 5 in your PowerPoint. So go ahead and take out your PowerPoint slides. And again, we'll start with slide 5. Slide 5 really talks about health promotion efforts. According to the World Health Organization, they have identified 6 leading causes of death, disability, and disease. And they are tobacco use, injury and violence, or any behaviors that result in injury and violence, alcohol and substance abuse, dietary and hygiene practices that may cause disease, sedentary lifestyles, as well as sexual behaviors that may result in unintended pregnancy or disease. Childhood obesity is probably one of the most common childhood health problems among American children. And I just want you to take a minute to reflect on that. Why do you feel that childhood obesity is probably one of the most common health problems among children these days? Well, it could be an increase in technology. We know television, lots of children watch television, they play video games, they may be on their computers or their iPads or even their iPhones, and they just lack that physical activity that's needed. Over the course of time, that can increase the risk for high cholesterol, diabetes, hypertension, and even heart disease in children. So it's something to really be proactive and educate families about. And that can really help enhance some of those prevention efforts that are needed. If you move on to the next slide, there's also a list of other childhood health problems that are pretty common. Childhood injuries is one of the most common causes of death and disability in the United States. And childhood injuries kind of encompass motor vehicle accidents, other types of injuries like choking, drowning, fires, even firearm accidents are all childhood injuries that could occur. Unintentional injuries are the leading cause of death after age 1 throughout adolescence. And those unintentional injuries, again, encompass those childhood injuries we just discussed. So car accidents, choking, drowning, all of those are unintentional injuries. So again, unintentional injuries are the leading cause of death after age 1 over the course of adolescence. So from age 1 throughout adolescence is where you're going to see the majority of those unintentional injuries occur. Violence is also a high priority concern. We see this everywhere. We turn on the TV and we see violence on the news. We see it on commercials, video games, different movies. And we also have to worry about violence in schools. We have to worry about guns, drugs, gangs, even. So all of that is something to kind of be aware of. We need early identification and prevention efforts to be increased in these areas. Some of the things that could be red flags if you ever work as a school health nurse or if you're around children more and more, young people who harm animals or who start fires or just are more and more depressed, all of those are red flags for violence. And it's just something to be aware of and really counsel some of those families about. Substance abuse is another health problem, as well as mental health problems. You know, mental health problems, if you look at the statistics, 1 in 5 adolescents has a mental health problem, and 1 in 10 has a serious emotional problem that affects their daily functioning. So mental health is huge. We see that earlier and earlier with age. So going back to childhood injuries, the type of injury and the circumstances surrounding that injury are closely related to the child's normal growth and development. So as the child grows, they become more and more curious. They start to become more aware of their surroundings. They investigate those surroundings, and they mimic behaviors that can actually lead to harm over time. Just some examples, when we think about infants less than 12 months old, they start to roll over. And a lot of times when they start to roll over more and more, we have to be really cautious as to where we place them when we lay them down. We don't want them to roll over anything that would cause them to fall off of something. So parents really have to be aware of some of those signs that their child or their infant is rolling over, and they just have to be very proactive as to the safety of that child. When we think about when they start to crawl, a lot of times infants start to put more and more objects in their mouth out of curiosity, and so there's an increased risk for choking or aspiration. We also have to be very careful about poisoning. So child locks are key, especially for toddlers. My toddler likes to get into everything, likes to pull open drawers, get into cupboards. So we have to really child-proof many things in our house. But there is that risk that they could get into chemicals, or they could even get into just medication that may be lying around the table. And so again, really educating parents and families about this risk is important. Moving on, the next slide just shows maybe an overweight child that's indulging in some chips and some candy. And again, it just brings back that message that high calorie, high fatty foods, sugar, all of that can lead to obesity in children. That next slide just shows a child playing with the steering wheel in a car. And again, motor vehicle accidents are those unintentional injuries, and they are the leading cause of death in children older than a year of age throughout the course of adolescence. And a lot of times, motor vehicle injuries are due to unrestrained children. They may not have their car seat in properly. They may be unrestrained in the vehicle. And so again, educating parents, doing those car seat checks is so important if you ever work in maternal child health. And just really educating them on resources of where they can get that car seat checked. A lot of firehouses will have firemen or paramedics check that car seat. So again, knowing those resources is important. That next slide, letter A, shows a small child in a swimming pool. Again, drowning is another leading cause of death. And so, never leave a child unattended. Make sure parents understand that. Even if they're bathing the child at home in one of those small bathtubs that you can put right up at the sink, if they look away for a minute, things happen so fast. So again, never leave the child unattended in any sort of water. Letter B shows a mom on the telephone, and you can see the little girl actually putting her hand into maybe a hot pot. Again, burn-related injuries are common at that age as a result of curiosity in children and parents being distracted. So it's important for parents to understand and just be cautious of where they place a pot or pan on the stove. If they can put it back on the back burner, it's a little bit better, because most likely children or toddlers can't reach up that high. But again, something to be proactive and teach, you know, families about. The next slide shows a firearm, and you can see maybe a little child or girl in the background. Improper storage or improper supervision of firearms can contribute to fire-related deaths. That's something else we need to be better proactive about and educate families. And then that next slide shows a small baby, looks like playing with a plastic bag. Mechanical suffocation is a leading cause of death from injury in infants. And this last picture you can see looks like a toddler playing with an open pill bottle, and there's pills kind of dispersed out onto the counter. Again, medication should never be left or placed where a child can reach them can lead to poisoning and obviously injury in the child. Infant mortality means the number of deaths per 1,000 live births during the first year of life. And infant mortality can be divided into two different categories. There's neonatal mortality and postnatal mortality. Neonatal mortality is less than 28 days of life, and postnatal mortality is 28 days to 11 months. Infant mortality has decreased in the US, but it does lag behind other nations in reducing infant mortality. A lot of efforts are being kind of aimed at just really educating women during pregnancy. So maternal health has increased to a certain extent. They are more aware of resources available to them. And also there's lots of awareness and campaigns that are being done to just increase awareness to this issue. Birth weight is a major determining factor of neonatal health. When we use the term low birth weight refers to a child that weighs less than 2,500 grams or 5.5 pounds. And usually the lower the birth weight, the higher rate of mortality. So it's just something to be aware of. It's a term that we kind of throw out loosely. Other things just to be aware of are congenital defects or anomalies, disorders that are related to a shorter gestation or low birth weight babies, sudden infant death, as well as any newborns that could be affected by maternal complications of pregnancy. All of these things account for 50% of infant deaths less than a year of age. Moving on to childhood mortality. Childhood mortality refers to death rates for children greater than a year of age, and these are often less than for infants. So that's really interesting. Ages 5 to 14 have the lowest death rate. However, there is a very sharp increase during the time of adolescence, just because adolescence is a time for freedom, and many teenagers don't think anything bad could happen to them. But some of those bad things could be different types of injuries, homicide, as well as suicide. Homicide is actually one of the leading causes of death in adolescents anywhere from 15 to 19 years of age. Suicide is a leading cause of death among children and adolescents anywhere from 10 to 19 years of age. Moving on to morbidity. The term morbidity describes illness, but also encompasses just acute and chronic disabilities as well. And this slide actually shows specific groups of children that have increased morbidity or illnesses. So those that are homeless, those that live in poverty, those that have a low birth weight, those that maybe have been adopted from a foreign region, or children in daycare centers. All of these things or characteristics increases morbidity. There are certain respiratory disorders like bronchitis, pneumonia, asthma, that kind of play a role in morbidity. Also too, we've talked about, you know, sedentary lifestyle, so obesity, diabetes, all of those things could also be an example of morbidity rates in children. As with any type of nursing practice or care, it's really important to pay attention to the responses of health and illness in children. When we take care of children, we are still gathering evidence with our assessment. So we integrate objective and subjective data into our assessments, and we apply the nursing process when we're caring for and treating these patients. It's also a time to facilitate health promotion and healing practices within the child as well as their parents. We use the term family-centered care a lot when talking about pediatric nursing. When we use the term family-centered care, it really incorporates family as the constant in the child's life. So everything we do with the child, we do with the family, and we form almost a partnership with the family, and we help support the child as well as the family members' decision making. We really have to rely a lot on the family. They know that child the best, and they're going to give us the best information when they come in about the child's health status. So we really need to facilitate a trusting, compassionate relationship with the family as well as the child. And really, we're not just caring for just the child, we're caring for all members of that child's family. And again, this just incorporates support, respect, encouragement, as well as strength within the family. We empower the family to become more competent within that child's plan of care as well. So really, we use those concepts of enabling and empowering family members. When we talk about enabling family members, we basically give them time to show us what they already know, what their current ability and competencies are with the child, and it's also a time for them to learn or acquire new competencies just to help meet the needs of that child or other family members. And when we empower a family, we're giving them control. We help just facilitate or foster our relationship with them, but we empower them by making them stronger, and we help strengthen their communication, and we just give them a little bit more control over the situation. So it's, again, it's just so important to create very encouraging relationships with those family members. Again, it's a partnership with not just the child that you're caring for, but their whole family. The term atraumatic care really describes providing therapeutic care in all settings that really focuses on minimizing any harm or physical or emotional distress in pediatric patients. So atraumatic care is such a priority when we're talking about pediatrics. We want to use interventions that eliminate or minimize any psychological or physical distress that they may experience or that their family members may experience. Again, one of our first ethical one of the first ethical goals is to do no harm. And this is just a priority overriding goal that we always must encompass into our care that we provide to our patient and our families. So again, we prevent or minimize the child's separation from their family, if at all. We promote a sense of control for the child as well as the family members in this process. And again, we prevent and minimize bodily injury and pain. So those are some goals just to try to abide by if you are ever working with a pediatric patient. When we talk about psychological stress, again, psychological distress could be just anxiety, fear, anger, disappointment, guilt, any of those emotions. And physical distress could be pain, it could be loud noises, bright lights, darkness, it could be not getting enough sleep or being sleepless, maybe immobilization. All of those things could be stressful for that patient. So that's what we mean by psychological and physical distress. So moving on to the next slide, the role of the pediatric nurse. Again, our priority concern is the welfare of the child and the family. So developing therapeutic relationships or meaningful relationships with the child and the family is a priority. We need to have well-defined boundaries that are both compassionate and yet professional in practice. We want to just promote control for the families, as well as maintain open communication and trust with the patient as well as the family members. Family advocacy and caring are priority goals as well. As a pediatric nurse, we really have to be advocates for the family. We have to help plan interventions that address the child's needs, and we always need to act in the best interests of the child. We help facilitate the best interests of the child when helping parents make informed choices. We also focus on health promotion. So disease prevention and health promotion really encompasses education and guidance. We talk a lot about safety programs and educate families on how to reduce injuries and disability. We teach them about their child's diagnosis and treatment plan. We encourage both the child and the family to ask questions. We refer families if needed. We give them appropriate resources and really tell them where to access different literature if they're interested. And we just really help facilitate guidance throughout the process. So the role of the pediatric nurse is very, very lengthy. It continues on to the next page. We provide support and counseling to, you know, the child and the family. Again, we are active listeners. We provide therapeutic touch. We help problem solve. And again, we help really counsel through difficult emotions that the child and family may be experiencing. We also collaborate with other healthcare professions to provide the most holistic care possible for the child and family. Sometimes we have to do some ethical decision making. When we talk about ethical decision making, having an ethical dilemma is when two or more ethical principles are in conflict with one another and there's just no right answer. So some things that you might experience if you ever work in the NICU, for example, would be the use of life-saving measures for very low birth weight newborns, and looking at quality versus quantity of care. So just some things to kind of think about as you reflect on what ethical decision making might mean. Research and evidence-based practice are nothing new to you. This is something that you will use throughout practice. And we know that nursing is always evolving and changing. And so it is up to us nurses to investigate the best practice approaches and help make the quality of care the best for the patients that we care for. The last couple slides have to do with the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of the Child. And these are just guidelines to help ensure that every child receives optimum care. And I'm not going to go through each slide with you. This is something that you guys can read through together. What I will do is look at the very last slide, and you should have a question. And that question says, the leading cause of death among African American boys ages 15 to 19 years is suicide, HIV infection, firearm homicide, or occupational injuries. What do you think is the correct answer? Give you a few seconds. Firearm homicide is the correct answer to this question. Firearm homicide is the second overall cause of death in this age group, but leading cause of death in African Americans. So this concludes my podcast. If you guys have any questions, please contact me. Don't hesitate to ask. Thank you very much. Have a good day.